Marvel Entertainment is a cash-generating behemoth. Consider Ant-Man.
Who the hell are you?
I'm Ant-Man.
Ant-Man?
Iron Man was taken.
By Marvel standards, not a blockbuster, but still holding at number one for two weekends running, earning more than $100 million domestically. With three of the 10 highest-grossing films of all time to its credit, it seems the company's own particular superpower must be the ability to tap into the nation's zeitgeist. And according to the Washington Post's Alyssa Rosenberg, that zeitgeist is anti-capitalist in nature.
The premise started off a little jokey, and then everywhere I looked, there was more evidence for it.
40 years ago, I created a suit, but it was dangerous, so I hid it from the world. My assistant, Darren Cross, he became obsessed with recreating my formula. If this technology gets out, it's going to be chaos.
Ant-Man is one of a number of movies in what's been dubbed Marvel's Phase One, its recent spate of movies, that has as its supervillain an industrialist, an inventor. In this case, it's Darren Cross, the protege of Hank Pym, a brilliant scientist, who has basically created a set of warfighting suits that he wants to sell so he can set up a pipeline for a valuable commodity that he's invented that powers the suits. He's one of many sort of amoral characters who sees war as a way to make a whole lot of money. The 2013 movie Iron Man 3 has Iron Man facing off against yet another evil businessman, Guy Pearce's Aldrich Killian, who is trying to turn the war on terror into a profit center.
This time tomorrow, I'll have the West's most powerful leader in one hand and the world's most feared terrorist in the other. I'll own the war on terror. Create supply and demand.
In the first Iron Man movie, which sort of kicked off this whole Marvel project, Stark is in conflict with Obadiah Stane, who's actually running his father's company for him, who wants Stark Industries to stay in the arms business because he sees it as very profitable.
You really think that just because you have an idea, it belongs to you? Your father, he helped give us the atomic bomb. Now, what kind of world would it be today if he was as selfish as you?
And Guardians of the Galaxy?
I know it sounds silly. Guardians of the Galaxy is a movie about characters who steal this incredibly valuable commodity and come to realize that it's something that shouldn't be on the free market at all. It's too dangerous. And their transition from outlaws to heroes come when they make that realization that they shouldn't profit off this thing that they've stolen.
These stones can only be brandished by beings of extraordinary strength. Observe. These carriers can use this stone to mow down entire civilizations like wheat in a field.
Like Ant-Man, it's a movie about how some commodities just shouldn't be out there for anybody to buy.
Another philosophical strain that you've picked up in these recent films by Marvel is suspicion about tech utopia, that technology will solve our problems.
Absolutely. And you see that most strongly in the character of Tony Stark. He believes that he can innovate his way out of any problem, right? The most recent Avengers movie features him having built this peacekeeping force, but one of his inventions, this artificial intelligence called Ultron, eventually goes rogue and, you know, kills hundreds of thousands of people.
I know you mean well. You want to protect the world, but you don't want it to change. There's only one path to peace. Your extinction.
The idea that we can control all of our inventions is something that the Marvel Universe is very skeptical of.
Do the DC comic franchises, you know, Superman and Batman, offer a contrast here? How do DC's threats differ from Marvel's?
They tend to be external. They tend to come from sort of outside the galaxy or foreign forces, and that's foreign defined broadly. You know, you have someone like General Zod who showed up in Man of Steel intending to colonize Earth for his own people and, you know, transform it completely. Whereas Marvel seems to suggest that a lot of our problems are self-created, whether it's that we bombed another country and turned people against us, or that we invented something that was supposed to be great but ended up causing all sorts of external problems.
At the risk of being obvious, there's a certain irony here about a media conglomerate like Marvel, a subsidiary of Walt Disney, trying to make nuanced points about capitalism's overreach.
Oh, totally. I mean, we should be clear that these movies that are suspicious of capitalism and tech visionaries make an astonishing amount of money. It's an interesting testament to the extent to which pop culture can co-opt pretty much any sentiment out there.
It can commodify anti-capitalism.
Exactly. Taking our deepest, most challenging ideas, neutralizing them, and convincing us to turn over our own hard-earned money to see those points made on screen.
As an avowed progressive, do you really think that Marvel's head honchos buy this anti-capitalist philosophy, or have they just been banking on the idea that Marvel fans do?
Let's be clear. I don't think Marvel is like the vanguard of the revolution. There's a lot of anxiety and discomfort about technology and the technology of war, and that's a smart thing to address. But I think that we will become more accustomed to things like drones. We've already become accustomed to massive violations of our privacy. Either we will resolve some of these conflicts or we will accustom ourselves to them. And when that happens, it's going to be on to a new set of concerns. Marvel is actually about to pivot. We're entering phase two of its long-term movie plan.
Return to me again empty-handed. I will bathe the stalwarts in your blood.
Thanos, this blue alien with a weird-looking chin played by Josh Brolin, is clearly coming from outside the galaxy to get what's his from ours. Thanos is kind of a dull character. He's just super powerful. And so I think the uses to which Marvel puts him will be revealing about what they think that we are afraid of and what we want to see defeated.
What can you deduce about how Marvel will be guessing what we care about based on what you know of its future projects?
Well, there are two projects I'm really interested in. The first is the Luke Cage show that's in development with Netflix. Cage is a character who is explicitly identified with the Black community in Harlem, who became a vigilante and a superhero because no one else was taking care of Harlem, because of sort of racist lack of investment in the neighborhood because of failed policing. The other character who functions much the same way is Black Panther, a character who is traditionally the ruler of Wakanda, an African country that has never been colonized. It was never ruled by white people. There's actually an amazing cartoon adaptation of the comic where Captain America shows up, asks Black Panther if Wakanda needs help keeping out the Nazis, and Black Panther kicks him out of the country. He's like, we got this. We're fine. We're good.
You can go home now. We have already taken out the garbage.
They are symbols of Black power, and in the current climate, how Marvel handles that is going to be really telling.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Alyssa Rosenberg blogs about pop culture for The Washington Post.
WNYC Studios is supported by Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. What is it about Dana-Farber that makes it such a powerful adversary against cancer? It's hundreds of Dana-Farber researchers and clinicians making new discoveries inspired by the work of previous Dana-Farber discoverers. At Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, nothing is as effective against cancer as a relentless succession of breakthroughs. Go to DanaFarber.org/everywhere and see how what we do here changes lives everywhere.